lot of things, but I do love you, and I do acknowledge you, and it's just a coincidence that I was speaking about you tonight, and it's just a coincidence, too, that somebody here has a cell phone. And I do love you, and I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I'll try to do better in the new year. From Charleston, South Carolina, North Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, Pee Wee. It's me again. Just want to say I love you, and I'll be writing you soon.
Hi, Pee Wee. Hi, son. This is your dad again. Call you again. I love you. Thinking about you all the time. Praying that God that let you open doors for you. And believe you're going to have a Happy New Year. You know, we've got to, Lord, I can't even get out. But I hope you have a nice Christmas. I'm going to send you something in the bill. I'm trying to get your brother to pick up something to send you some. But that knucklehead, you know how they are, they're tight.
You didn't have to say all that, Pee Wee.
Yes, I do.
Pee Wee, we love you.
And a Merry Christmas. And a Happy New Year.
Love you, Pee.
I'm singing a little bit. Bell, jingle bell, I know he's laughing. Jingle all the way. Oh my.
Okay. All right, Diane, that's it.
All right.
Are we still on?
Yes.
Okay, well, we are so done. We are so done.
Well, I'm
my
sure
he's up on the radio singing.
I'm sure he'll love it.
Oh, my
yeah, I still can't sing.
My dad's on the radio singing. Everybody across the nation heard you.
Yeah, all right, good. It's a creed, don't let him sing no more.
You make a joyful
thank
noise.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to give a shout-out to my brother Andre Drayton from the Bronx, New York. And this is his sister, Diane. Andre, I love you so much. Okay, hold your head up. All right? And Ma, she's doing really okay. All right? I love you, I love you, I love you.
Tell Orbert Salas that his uncle Weston said what's happening. And keep his head up. And time will go by fast. We just keep the faith.
This message is for my husband, David Harris. This is from his wife, Jacqueline Harris, from Richmond. This is a scripture that I wanted to dedicate for us for during this Christmas season. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. I just want to say that our hope is in the Lord, and I know that the new year will bring prosperity and new things for us. And I want you to know that I love you, and I wish you the best. God bless you.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Calls from Home, a call-in program that shares prisoners' families sending greetings to their loved ones. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producers are Nick Saberla, Amelia Kirby, and Tucker Wilson. I'm Amelia Kirby in Whitesburg, Kentucky. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. It's December 21st, 2006. That's the solstice, folks. It's the longest night. Stay tuned, and let's make it through at least this part of the night together.
Two, one, two.
She told me the state is my enemy. Property is theft. A year in the slammer couldn't keep her mouth shut. J. Edgar Hoover couldn't move her from my heart. I'm talking Emma, Emma, Emma Goldmine. Emma, Emma, hey! I heard her screaming about the meaning of the black flag.
get sick to your guts. I mean, two people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship. What are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Oh, a man must never lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three-button suit. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution from people who want to get married. Now, every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third, that a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage, connubial narcs, ever vigilant patriotic patriarchs. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution from people who want to get married. Turn gay to annoy Dick Cheney and Dick Army. We're an army of dicks with a militant stance, getting the government off our backs and into our pants. Defenders of marriage, defending the institution from people who want to get married, have their insurance carried, be beneficiaries, and be with the ones they love when they are buried.
And that was Ann Feeney. From her CD, Ann Feeney's If I Can't Dance, It's Not My Revolution. And you were hearing Emma Goldman and Defenders of Marriage. Hi, I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 2 hours of local news, views, and anything else you want to put on the air, preferably about local civil rights issues. That's where I try to steer things. There's going to be a big demonstration tomorrow, at least I hope it'll be big, in front of the city attorney's office. That's John Barasone, city attorney for life of Santa Cruz City. Not according to the Constitution or the city charter or the law, but according to practice and fact. He's never going to change until he chooses to retire, and they won't change him. But hopefully we can change him. Our objective tomorrow at noon at 333 Church Street, which is where his office is, right across from the city council offices, right down from the Civic Auditorium on Church Street, about a block from the library, the main branch, is to get him to do what the Los Angeles city attorney and the San Diego city attorney and police chiefs have done, which is declare that they are not going to be citing or at least arresting. Actually, it's both, particularly in the case of Los Angeles. Homeless people who sleep at night. I know it's quite a faux pas to sleep at night if you're homeless and, you know, disturbs merchants who might potentially find you there during the day when they come back. But sleeping at night is considered, in many parts of the world, not just a right, but a necessity. And in Santa Cruz, of course, the sleeping ban, the criminalization of sleeping, which happens under our municipal code, 6.36.010A, which makes it illegal to sleep from 11 to 8:30 in the morning, will be enforced. It's enforced tonight, even though there's shelter tonight for less than 10%, 5%, somewhere in there, of the homeless population. There's space tonight for about 140, I was told. I thought it was 160. Maybe it's somewhere between 140 and 160 homeless people in the emergency shelter program, which is the Armory and three churches. Each have room for 12 to 18 people, something like that, out of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. So it's not a pretty situation if you're cold outside and wet, and it's even worse if you face a $90 ticket. So show up tomorrow at noon, and there's going to be some hot food from India Joe Schultz and Tenderfoot Tim Rumford, who I was going to be co-hosting tonight, but he got into a little accident, and he's hopefully recovering. Maybe he'll call in and give us all the grim details or let us know what he's been up to. And that's tomorrow at noon. I invite everybody to come on down. Bring some food if you want, or just bring your own bellies and bring some instruments. We're going to be passing around a petition for the city attorney and the city authorities to consider, even though we know they're all Christmas bound and vacation bound and so forth. There are people outside who not only are faced with inadequate shelter, but criminalization and tickets and potential arrest if they try to shelter themselves by putting up a tent against the rain, as, for example, tonight I'm sure many people are trying to do. And maybe they're faced with the roaming Ranger Wallace, who we've just learned in the last 7 months has given out 265 citations. That's on top of the 30 a month that are being given out by the police department. So that makes about 60 citations a month going out to homeless people, again, to discourage them, like, pests, rats, or birds from gathering in any one place for safety and protection, mutual comfort. That's the criminalization of the poor, Santa Cruz style. It's been going on for decades, and it's time it ended. So we'll be out there tomorrow to do our bit to move that process of moving into the 21st century, the real 21st century, 21st century as it should be, to keep that process going and to move it forward. So you can call into the show if you've got announcements to make, if you have commentary, if you want to gripe about anything I'm saying, or if you feel that there's some news that I should be covering that isn't being covered. Again, my interest is in local political activity around civil rights issues, pretty much. I include such things as medical marijuana, such things as how the police are treating folks downtown on the streets of Santa Cruz, how landlords are treating tenants, how organizations that are supposed to be, for example, treating vets properly, may or may not be treating them properly. All these issues are fair game on this show. And the number to call is 427-3772. Again, 427-3772. That's for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. If you have a message for us off air, a contribution, some advice, some criticism, interest perhaps in having a show of your own, the number to call is 427-4523, 427-4523. You can also go online to freakradio.org, www. and find us, and you can also fill out an application there and say, hey, I want a show, and consider me. And we have liberal standards. In fact, we have very liberal standards, but don't try to be too conservative, or you might not make your way onto the show, particularly, on the other hand, I think we are interested in any in new local stuff, particularly if you've got a show got in mind, whether it's music, whether it's spoken, whether it's shouted. Consider it, and let us consider it too, because the more local involvement, the better, generally speaking. Republicans beware. Anyway, this show will take calls from everyone, Republicans included. So please call in, 427-3772, if you're interested. I'm going to begin with Street Interviewer 2, and we're going to move to the Scotts Valley City Council meeting very shortly. That's the meeting that happened last night up in our neighboring San Lorenzo Valley, Scotts Valley, where the Santa Cruz, no, it was the Scotts Valley City Council that had its second reading of a bill to make it criminal for homeless people to shelter themselves in a community where they don't provide any shelter, but simply kind of a, now we're going to have a big sign that says, get out. And that's, you get to hear the critics talk about this, and the city council members do a tiny bit of responding. There's not much there, but there's some great, frankly, I thought it was our best performance yet. I spoke, others spoke, and you know, it's going to be, it passed anyway, 5-0, and will be going into force in a month. Makes it illegal to camp anywhere on public property in Scotts Valley. We promised them lawsuits and attorneys if we could find the attorneys to do the lawsuits, and we're looking for them, and that's one of the things that's going to be happening tomorrow. Attorney Catnip Kate Wells may be speaking tomorrow at this rally in front of the city attorney's office at 333 Church Street, where again, hot food from India Joe Schultz will be provided. It's supposed to be, the weather's supposed to be nice. The rain is supposed to pass. We're supposed to have a decent day. So if you want to take time out from buying useless and meaningless articles downtown from merchants who are eager to clear homeless people from the streets, or let's put it this way, who don't seem to be expressing any deep concerns or visible or public concerns about this when it happens every night and every day. Although, admittedly, not in a systematic and high-profile way, but pretty inexorably and pretty surely. If you want to do your bit for a civil rights cause, you can show up tomorrow at noon, if you can do that. If you can't show up, give a call to City Council now, or perhaps you can do both. 420-5020 is the number to call. Perhaps you can ask to talk to Councilmember Rotkin. This is a 24-hour, I call it the cold line, because of the nature of the City Council's non-response to this issue. But it's a 24-hour line where you can talk to members of the Santa Cruz City Council, at least through their voicemail. And you should tell a council member of your choice how you feel about their policy of criminalizing the poor. And also, it's a potential impact on the pocketbook of the city, because that's the reason it wasn't love, compassion, or the Christmas spirit that drove Los Angeles and San Diego's city attorney and police chief to say, stop arresting the homeless, let them sleep. At least don't use this law, and don't use a sleeping ban law against them. It was the fact that they're afraid that the Jones decision, the decision made by the Ninth Federal Court of Appeals, is going to result in a victory, and they're all going to be legally vulnerable for every action they took against a homeless person. It's already been declared cruel and unusual punishment to arrest a homeless person, or cite a homeless person, or move a homeless person on, or punish them for sitting, sleeping, or lying on Skid Row at night. There's serious concern that that's going to be upheld. I don't know why our local ACLU legal eagles don't do something about this here, except that they want to. I've been told that they're not so certain. Apparently, they're less nervous than the Los Angeles and San Diego city attorneys. I mean, they're more nervous than those two attorneys in power in the largest two cities in the state. Actually, I think Oakland and San Jose are actually bigger than San Diego, but Los Angeles is the largest city in the state. So come on down tomorrow, and here's a little street stuff, and then we'll get into Scotts Valley. So stay tuned, and call in if you want, 427-3772.
Okay, well, it is... the sun is coming out on a cold Sunday, 10 to 2 on December 17th. We're talking with
Nikolai Dahmer.
And you're here at the corner of Church and Pacific with a sign on your backpack, testing human kindness. You can bomb the world to pieces, but you can't bomb it to peace. Buck Fush, I don't support legal terrorism. Give peace a chance, adopt a hippie. Is this a surreptitious cry for spare change?
No.
So what in fact are you seeking here?
People to realize that the war over there isn't for freedom or for terrorists. It's a war of greed. It's for oil. I mean, people need to give up a little bit of luxury to save people's lives.
So this is, in fact, a straightforward political educational campaign.
Yes. I lost my sister a month ago over there.
She was in the military?
Yes, she's a Marine.
What kind of what position did she have? What was her name?
Her name was Linda Bailey, and she passed away on November 12th. And
how did she die?
Car bomb.
And she was had she been in the military for a long time before that?
About a year.
And were you at that time supportive of her decision to join, or?
It's what she wanted to do, and. Like, I believe that, yeah, that was a good thing she was in the military, but not for this war.
Sorry, these fucking motorcycles are really hard for me to hear past.
Being in the military is not a bad thing. It's the war, the reason for this war is a bad thing.
Well, doesn't being in the military at this time mean, in essence, supporting this war? You have to follow orders, so you go and support the war.
Yes.
So then I would have to say that at this time, being in the military is a bad thing.
Yeah. Like, I would love to be a Marine just to have the training, because America is not going to go unattacked forever. I mean, something's going to happen eventually, and I want to be trained, but I don't support his war, so I'm not there.
How has the community responded to your sign?
I've gotten pretty much what I've expected. Like, everybody thinks that the testing human kindness means money, and it's like,
what are you looking for from the community here?
Just being caring, like, and saying hi to the person next to you, like, maybe wondering, well, who's this person, instead of not... Most of the people out here don't care about the person walking next to them, wouldn't care what happened to them. Nothing, like...
Indeed.
And it's like, everybody's a bunch of robots anymore, and it's... I mean, I come from a small town where you say hi to somebody and they say hi back. You smile and somebody smiles and not glares at you because you made a gesture of kindness.
What town are you from?
All over. I've been on the road for the last 8 years. This is actually my hometown. It's been 14 years since I've been here.
So you were born in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
And how has it changed in 14 years? Do you remember, or were you a wee lad?
I was 8. Like, I remember things, but it's changed a lot. Like, I mean, it's some of the Santa Cruz spirit's still here, but it's more of in the people on the streets. Like, I mean, there's the pink guy.
The what?
The pink guy. He's a part of Santa Cruz's spirit, and... Like, he's still here, and, like...
He wasn't here 14 years ago, but...
He's been here for quite some time.
For about 3 or 4 years, at least. And actually, before that, he was the man in the bag in front of Bunny's shoes. But I'm off to a meeting. I thank you for sharing your thoughts with me, as well as your sign, testing human kindness. Anything you want to conclude with?
Bring our soldiers back. Like, they're over there fighting a war that shouldn't be fought right now. It's a war over luxury. I mean, are you willing to pay a couple more dollars for gas to save a life?
Sure, but why bother? I can ignore everybody on the streets. Thank you again. We've been talking with
Nikolai Delmer.
Thank you. I'm here about 4 o'clock in the light rain on Sunday afternoon with
Mike Rhodes
from Fresno and
Jeremy Alderson
from
Hector, New York.
And the two of you are, and
Pamela Kincaid
from
Fresno.
The only homeless person in the group.
Right now.
also involved with watching us with a video camera is
Becky Johnson.
I'm Robert Norris. It covers it, doesn't it? So go ahead, Mike. You came to town in order to check out the scene. Jeremy, you have a homeless marathon coming up in February?
Yeah, the Homelessness Marathon, actually.
And what is that?
It's an annual 14-hour broadcast on homelessness and poverty in America. We don't raise money, just consciousness. And for 14 hours, we talk to experts, we have panels, we take calls from around the country. We're trying to promote a dialogue. And most important, we put homeless people on the air directly.
And you've also said you have little patience with homeless coalitions, at least 2 coalitions you've come in touch with that have sort of, would poverty pimpery be an appropriate phrase?
That's not really a phrase I would use, but it's poverty hypocrisy would certainly be one that I would use. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, the head of it, John Parvinsky, he endorsed the Denver 10-year plan, which includes anti-sitting, anti-lying, and anti-panhandling ordinances. He called it a model that should be spread throughout the state, and these are exactly the things that any legitimate homeless advocate would be against. They also had a tent city initiative in Denver. They were very close to getting a tent city. The city council was meeting on it. There was support for it, and the biggest witness against it was John Parvinsky, the head of the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, who said, well, you can't, that's not good enough, having people in tents, but the alternative was having them on the streets. Colorado Coalition for the Homeless gets $16 million a year, and $14 million of it comes from government sources, according to their IRS 990 form. So, and really, they have sold out and met the criteria of they've got to get for funding. Meanwhile, I asked Michael Stoops of the National Coalition for the Homeless. I said, how can a guy like this be on your board? And he's, as far as I know, I haven't checked lately, but as of last year, the head of the Colorado Coalition was the vice president of the National Coalition for the Homeless's board. Well, the NCH puts out an annual list of the meanest cities to the homeless based on whether or not they have exactly the kinds of ordinances which the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless endorsed. How can you have somebody on your board who is endorsing the exact things which your organization is opposing? To me, that's about as hypocritical as it gets.
Now, did in fact the board have any impact on changing this report? I mean, was Colorado deleted from the report? Or
Colorado did not appear in that report.
Interestingly enough, yes. Santa Cruz, however, was way up there on those days, on those years when we actually turned in reports. I wonder if their report is based at the National Coalition's Meanest Cities report is based on whether how many reports they get. If you've got an active homeless group, maybe you get more likely infamy. Pam, you're from Fresno.
Yes.
You're on the streets.
Yes, I am.
You're consorting with the housed.
Yes.
You live in a tent?
Yes, I do.
And you've never been given a camping ticket in 6 years on the streets?
No, I haven't, not yet.
On the other hand, you said there's I've heard from your co-conspirator here, Michael Rhodes, that there's a different policy in Fresno, which is to simply cut short the paperwork by simply bulldozing the settlement.
Exactly, just destroying your things.
And has that happened to you?
Yes, it has.
How many times?
Maybe 7.
Whoa. And so, certainly this is just trash you lost. Nothing of value, right?
Right.
So give an example of the kind of things you lost in these 7 different depredations.
My tools for making crafts, my identification, my birth certificate, my grandfather's Bible, the only pictures I had of my deceased mother. Personal things. Things that cannot be replaced.
And yet in Fresno recently, or perhaps because of this, you were able to get a federal judge's ear on this issue?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We're suing the city and the police department, and we've gotten a restraining order for them to stop this for the time being.
And we're talking, I guess, a temporary restraining order that became a preliminary injunction?
Exactly.
And have they stopped going after you?
So far.
And so does this mean that when the Merchants Association howls, the police look the other way, or they find a different law?
I would assume they're going to find a different law. They might start the camping law.
Or the statewide anti-lodging law, 647J. Michael Rhodes, you I don't know who drove over here, but you look like a likely suspect in this matter. You've been videoing Fresno police trying to enforce some decent order in Fresno with the ragamuffins and the tramps, the bums, or as KSCO commentator once called them, the skunks, punks, and the drunks, trying to despoil the downtown Fresno streets. You've been interfering with that particular operation. Why is that?
Well, I've been following this issue for a couple of years now as a journalist, trying to shine a light on the actions of the city of Fresno and how they treat homeless people. What we found is that they simply take the law into their own hands when they come in and with a bulldozer and take people's property and immediately destroy it. It just didn't seem right to us. And so we wanted to find out why that was happening. That's why this federal court lawsuit is in progress right now, why we have a temporary restraining order, a preliminary injunction. Because the city of Fresno simply took it upon themselves to create a policy that was outside of the Constitution. They don't treat anybody else's property like that. If there's property that's lost or stolen, they have a process for dealing with that property. They take it into custody, they store it, and they give it back to people. With the homeless, they have a completely different standard. They simply take it and destroy it. We took that to a federal judge. He ruled in our favor. We have a preliminary injunction now. The city of Fresno is, as far as I know, no longer engaged in that activity. What has happened, though, is that we have the railroad now taking over for the city. Sort of
Caltrans?
It's one of the, it's like Southern Pacific or Union Pacific, one of the railroads that comes through town. They are now taking the role that the police had and telling homeless people to move out of areas around the train tracks. And when they don't, they threaten to arrest them and to destroy their property.
And Pam, you don't live near the train tracks?
Not anymore.
On public property is where you live?
Actually, I do live on dead railroad tracks.
So you could be harassed by the Caltrain people or the train people?
They find me.
But you said that, I guess they've been, you were concerned that there was going to be a massive kind of sweep operation. What they in fact did was they warned homeless people, or rather you found out that they were going to do this. You warned the homeless people. They moved their stuff. Caltrain did its, quote, cleanup operation. They've moved back, and they're not being, as of yet, hassled further.
What happened this last week is we heard that homeless people have been told to move, that if they don't move, they were going to be arrested. So we went out there with our video cameras and stood with them and watched this process unfold. A number of homeless people did not move their things. They were wondering what was going to happen. They didn't want to have their property destroyed. But they didn't want to just roll over on this because it's wrong that that the railroad or the city could just come in and take their property and destroy it. So several of them held their ground. They refused to move. They stayed there. The crews, the railroad crews, threatened to arrest them. The police came in. They were told to move. They didn't. There was police all around. The railroad crews, and the bulldozer was coming down closer towards them. And when it came, push came to shove, what happened is they simply went around them, and they picked up the trash around the encampments and moved on. And there were no arrests. There was no property destruction.
I think this is because of the federal injunction, the cameras, both, a sudden a humane sentiment on the part of the police chief, bulldozer revolt. What was this?
No. They know that they have no right to take people's property and destroy it.
But they knew that 3 months ago, and they didn't. They were still doing it, though.
Right. Well, what happened, though, is we went through court. We brought in a lot of testimony to find out what was at the bottom of this. And basically what was at the bottom of it was this one officer in code enforcement that created a rule that he implemented.
Name of the officer?
Ray Wallace.
Name of the rule?
Wallace's rule.
Wallace rules, apparently.
The judge was a little amazed that a low-ranking officer in the Fresno Police Department could create a rule of
how low
magnitude. He was like a corporal or something. And that we brought the city manager of Fresno in, and he confirmed that this was the ordinance, the policy of the city of Fresno and how they deal with the homeless.
He backed up Wallace.
He did.
So now it's the city manager's liability.
The city is on the hook for this, and they know that they are. They're clearly out of sync with the law. And so the point is that the railroad can't do it any more than the city of Fresno can do it, and they know that. But they can threaten and intimidate people, and they could say that they're going to arrest them, and they could say that they're going to destroy their property. But when push came to shove, and there was somebody there videotaping it, they didn't do it.
But indeed, they could still ticket you for being on their property without permission if you refuse to leave, right?
Yeah, well, these people had been there for years and had permission to live there.
From?
The people from the railroad. They would come by every week or so and say, you know, how are you doing?
Permission that could be easily revoked.
Without regard to that. They'd lived there for, I think Gino said he'd been there for 3 years and never had any problem. As soon as the temporary restraining order came out, within a couple of days, they posted no trespassing signs
right.
up.
Exactly.
A week or two after that, they came out and told them that they would have to leave. You think that was a coincidence that this all happened at the same time? No, I don't think
that. My point is that they can create or use other laws if they can't use the existing, well, you know, obviously it's most effective to terrorize someone by simply destroying their property and saying, see how much power we have, see how little regard we have for you. But if they can't do that, then they have to say, well, we'll arrest you for trespassing if you venture on the property. However, it has the same impact in the sense that you have to face criminal penalties or human penalties, I guess not so much criminal penalties, just having your stuff destroyed.
Yeah.
And so
they were
planning a second lawsuit to stop the trespass under the Pottinger decisions or the Jones guideline?
If If the railroad had destroyed these people's property, we would have filed a lawsuit against them. They didn't, and they knew that they couldn't legally do that, and I think that's why they, at the last minute,
right, but the railroad put up no trespassing signs, and presumably the city will do the same, and if that means then that... Or create a public camping law, or use the state 647J. That means people will still be vulnerable. They'll be to legal penalties and arrest. Or perhaps it's that the Fresno police are not likely to want to arrest. What's your feeling, Pam? Have you, those who are arrested among people you know, what are the charges usually? We're talking usually drug charges, common crimes like theft or battery or assault. Are there homeless crimes like having a shopping cart in the wrong place?
Yes, yes, they have the shopping cart rule now. I've not personally seen anybody arrested so far. But I have seen them come and dump everyone's things from the shopping carts and take them.
The police. 6 years on the streets, you've not seen anybody arrested?
Not myself.
But you've heard about it, Brett.
I mean, as far as shopping cart, no. Yes, I have heard about
Have you seen any arrests for so-called homeless crimes, like, you know, somebody being poor and visible? In terms of, under what circumstances have the police taken people to jail for, in essence, being homeless? Has anything come to mind?
Not really.
It could be that they've just been using this draconian alternative instead, which is we'll move you along by just destroying your stuff, kind of vigilante justice.
Right. Well, the problem is that people have nowhere else to go.
Right.
This railroad property is right next to a lot, some vacant land. And so the police were telling the homeless people, if you move your property onto this vacant lot, then the railroad won't care. Well, that's fine, but then you have the person who says they own the vacant lot saying that they don't want them there either. So the question is, where are you going to go?
So what
are
you going to do? Back to court?
No place in Fresno for homeless people to live without being harassed. Oh, yeah, we're certainly going to be back in court on this, but we're looking at a very narrow part of this problem. This isn't going to solve the problems of the homeless in Fresno. It's going to stop the city from destroying their property. Mm-hmm. The long-term solutions, or the longer-term solutions, is to have some place where people can live without being harassed, where there's some toilets.
We have a work camp on the outskirts of town we can go to. You will be free, free.
Some barbed wire around the perimeter.
I understand there was a barbed wire, drunk tank created in Fresno? Didn't you come up with that piece of propaganda a few years ago, Mr. Rose?
We may be the only city in the United States that has an outdoor drunk tank. It's run by the Rescue Mission, a fundamentalist
Christian drunk tank.
It is.
That's very impressive.
And I was, when they proposed this before the city council, and they did, they brought it up, they talked about it, it was unanimous. Unanimously supported by the Fresno City Council, I said, okay, well, why don't we set up another one up in North Fresno at River Park and have it run by a Muslim group that proselytizes the business drunks up on the north end of town. They could be put into this drunk tank in River Park that's surrounded by barbed wire.
They could become useful in the war in Iraq. That's what we need, help civilize them Iraqis, you know?
The city council wasn't impressed with my argument. They went ahead and
funded. You're a visionary before your time, my boy.
Yeah, they appreciate that, too.
We were talking with Mike Rhodes, and we're going to talk with him some more, not to mention Pam. What's your last name, Pam?
Kincaid.
Thanks, Pam. Sorry. Kincaid, I'll try to remember that. And, of course, the infamous Jeremy Mann from New York, whose last name, Aldrich?
Alderson.
Close. Yes.
And that was a conversation last Sunday after Jeremy, Pam, and Mike came to town to kind of gather with Santa Cruz activists. They successfully, as you heard, got the federal courts to intervene to stop Fresno police from seizing homeless property and destroying it. They have yet, of course, to stop them from harassing the homeless in terms of sleeping. But apparently the Fresno Police Department's mode of choice was to just go in and steal and destroy their property as a way of discouraging them from even being around. Of course, it apparently hasn't been effective because, as any fool knows, people will continue to survive more miserably and more wretchedly, of course, with or without their property. That's the nature of the human condition. Of course, I suppose if you use a Third Reichian solution or possibly a U.S. and Iraqian solution or... Stalinist solution, whatever you will, you can eliminate the people and, I suppose, diminish the problem. I suppose in some senses that's what is actually happening with military operations around the globe, although I'm sure that's not supposedly the intention. If you want to get more information about Mike Rhodes and what's going on in Fresno, you can go to indiebay.org/Central Valley. Indiebay, IndyBay.org/Central Valley, and Google for Mike Rhodes, Rhodes, or just look at the news page there and you'll get the latest on what's cooking there. I've been invited to go to Fresno in February to be a part of the Homelessness Marathon, which Free Radio covers every year. A tip of the hat to the V-Man for his work in getting that together, and also Skidmark Bob and the others who annually do that. Since I do a lot of the homelessness, Voices of the Homeless stuff 52 weeks a year, all year round, I kind of say right on, but, you know, I'm doing that anyway. But who knows? I may do that and represent Santa Cruz or get involved there in Fresno during that marathon. It's interesting that it's a law, Mike Rhodes said, the destruction of property laws by a police officer named Wallace here in Santa Cruz, Ranger Wallace of the Parks and Rec Department, the only ranger apparently who's giving out tickets downtown, has single-handedly given out, apparently, more tickets, or at least more tickets, significantly more tickets than all the entire police force, the Santa Cruz police force. Wallace, according to the figures passed on to me by Scott Lang, who is his superior in the Parks and Rec Department, has given out 265 citations in the last 7 months compared to 168. It may be slightly more that the police have given out, but it's around, it's more than or at least the same number as the Santa Cruz Police Department's citations. So here is one man who is enthusiastically, you know, standing athwart the tide of lawlessness where homeless people just won't follow the law and stay awake all night, which, of course, is what Ranger Wallace is trying to train these unruly homeless to do. And, of course, there are those who will say, and with some justification in some cases, that he's simply protecting the environment of the Poganip and the parks and arresting campers. But, frankly, I would like to see some evidence that these citations, $90 tickets, if people want to pay off the bail directly without going to court, which I'm sure most of the people can't afford, actually are justified by real environmental concerns. And I would wager dollars to ducats that isn't the case. This is simply a case of a bureaucrat gone wild. And just so as we have a bureaucracy in Santa Cruz under his boss, Danette Shoemaker, who's the head of the Parks and Rec Department, and Steve Hammack, who are willing to sit by or actually proactively moving to criminalize homeless presence in a lot of public spaces. Lang started it. That's another Lang. Jim Lang, we used to call him Liebensraum Lang, the head of the Parks and Rec Department, prior to Czarina Danette Shoemaker, when he in 1984 got the city council to close down all the parks at night. Makes the neighbors nervous, drug dealing, all that sort of thing. You know, pick a scare story of your choice. You're stopping the public from using public space for legal activities. We're not talking about illegal activities, talking about legal and necessary activities, or necessary activities that have been made illegal by a class war mentality that has been not just in Santa Cruz, of course, it happens around the world, but Santa Cruz is our piece of this particular problem that we are in charge with addressing, which some of us will do in our own way tomorrow noon at the city attorney's office, telling dear John Barisoni and his master, Dick Wilson, I don't actually know if it's his master. He's, I guess, Wilson in theory could fire the city attorney, I guess. I'm not sure. It might take the city council to fire the city attorney. Actually, the voters, presumably, could pass an initiative to get rid of Dick Wilson and John Barisoni. What am I saying? Come on, voters, think about that one. Not to mention recalling the current city council. Ah, the dreams that I have. It's happening tomorrow at noon, as I mentioned before. And the couple other things happened before I turned to Scotts Valley's debacle last night, where they passed their own anti-camping ordinance. I want to just note that, you know, this business of threatening and intimidating homeless people, which Mike Rhodes stood up against with his video cameras, and he was able to stop the bulldozer. And yes, often you can do the same. The First Night folks are standing up to police intimidation, proceeding to use public spaces. It would have a December 31st celebration without getting lost in the morass and the tar pit of permits and peeling through bureaucratic channels and trying to get the permission of control freak authorities as to how to proceed, when in fact the community will take charge of this, that part of the community that wishes to participate, and hopefully things will go well. Boy, the rain is coming down out there. And if you are interested in the last night festivities, you can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and get some information. Just go online and you'll find the story on the main page, or just Google for DIY last night Santa Cruz. DIY is do it yourself. Other bits of information have been coming out. We being Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with, the Human Rights Organization, and Tim Rumford's Humanity for the Homeless, which feeds every Monday night, had a huge meal, I am told. I got there just in time to see the last pie disappear on Monday night in front of New Leaf Market, downtown Santa Cruz, 6 to 10. They don't usually have huge meals, but they have meals, as does SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, every Tuesday night. 6 to 8, and SAFE plays again on Wednesday night from 6 to 10 with Grinmaster Greg and a gang of other wild and crazy guitarists and flautists and percussion people taking back public spaces, violating the city's move-along law, which says you can't be in the same place for more than an hour. You know, that's illegal. And says you can't be within 10 feet of a building. That's illegal. And a whole series of laws created by merchants to give the police completely arbitrary powers to move along whomever they want, such as they used inappropriately against Max Shane Maxfield in the Lulu Carpenters scandal, which we talked about, where Lulu Carpenters owner Man 3 Srinath came out of his upscale cafe, threatened and harassed Shane, a disabled AIDS patient with a bunny Fluffy on the sidewalk, who was sitting there with a sign, a panhandling sign. And Shane called the police for protection, and the police gave him a ticket because at some point Shane said to him, "Get away from me, you fucker," more or less. And that was used as an example of panhandling with obscene language, of course. Ticket never made it to court because I don't think it would pass constitutional muster. You have the right to say, "Fuck you, get away from me," if someone's threatening you, even if you're a panhandler. Although the law seems to indicate that the people who are on the other side of the panhandling sign, people walking by, all those fine folks buying their Christmas gifts, all of the rest of us who don't panhandle, we can say whatever the fuck we want to poor people on the sidewalk. But if they say something back to us, you know, that's harassment. You know, we don't want to be reminded of our own greed. We don't want to be reminded of our own selfishness or of our own closeness to homelessness. And I know panhandlers are a pain in the ass. I rarely give to panhandlers myself. I'm not a Mr. Open, Mr. Generous guy much of the time. Sometimes I am. Sometimes I do. And panhandlers get pissed off. But, you know, the fantasies that Rotkin and Matthews and Porter and Riley create on the city council that essentially doubled the amount of forbidden public space downtown, that made it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a building or to ask for spare change at night, even silently with a sign that somehow people are crowding in. "Hey, man, you got money for me?" I have not heard real cases of that happening except in the case of one rather overactive imagination-ish mailman who's given me some claims of that, but I'm going to have to review that. Well, maybe we should have him on the air talking about his bad experiences with panhandlers. Some people are very sensitive when they're and they take a rather harsh attitude of being asked for money, and I'm defensive about it myself. I don't want to be revealed as a skin flint. which is what I am, of course, in that respect, as we all are, many of us. Or many of us aren't. Actually, the poor are often the most generous. If you want to call in and comment on anything I'm saying, you're welcome to do so, 427-3772. Another thing that came up this week was an order from Heather Morse. She's the head judge of the Superior Court in Santa Cruz, and this story actually was covered by the Good Times a week ago. They're apparently making failures to appear and failures to pay, which are the warrants that go out after you when you don't come to court for a sleeping ticket or you don't pay a fine on a sleeping ticket after you've been to court. Those are now going to be sent with a $300 surcharge, mind you, down to someplace at Southern California, I believe, is where they came from recently, San Diego, and you will be, the collection agencies will come after you. So they'll be looking to, you know, confiscate your backpack and grab your sleeping bag and sell them for those fines you're mounting up for your crime of sleeping at night in a city that has no shelter space. It's going to be amusing to watch this in some respects, particularly if you're not being pursued by these people. Anyway, that order, finally, after a week and a half, I got the court to send it to me. It's been faxed to Huff activist Becky Johnson, who hopefully will get it to me soon, and I can read it on the air. We can actually hear what the order says. We've heard descriptions of the order. You can read the description of the order in the Good Times last week, which may be online, and also the Scotts Valley Banner, which did a small story on it. And a final bit of information I received, I got an email back from the same court supervisor, Tess Fitzgerald, I believe her name was, and she's been trying to be helpful but actually hasn't been very helpful in spite of her efforts. For 6 months, actually for more like 3 or 4 years, but recently from her for 6 months, I've been trying to get a copy of every sleeping ban citation in the last 6 months and the penalties and court process it went through. Did the person go to trial? How much were they fined? How many hours of community service were they supposed to do? Did they do the community service? All these issues, which are part of the court record and should be a part of the public records. The courts have consistently here refused to divulge this public information, even when we offered to pay for it. And their most recent excuse was, well, we can't do it. We don't have the names of these people. So we went to the police department. We finally got the names from the police department, which was much more forthcoming, actually, since they compile lists for the city council about this, brought them down to the court and asked for, an estimate of how much it would cost to print out the names. We got that estimate, and I'll give that to you in a moment. But first, this. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Hey, Becky.
I wondered if you wouldn't mind backtracking to the Heather Morse order.
Okay.
It's very short. It was filed November 14th, 2006, from the Superior Court of California County of Santa Cruz. It's regarding traffic and minor violation collections pursuant to PC 1214.1, Order Regarding Civil Assessment. And this is what it says. Effective November 14th, 2006, all traffic and minor violation infractions which have resulted in the issuance of a bench warrant are ordered recalled and return to the court effective immediately. Effective immediately, all traffic and minor violation infractions which have resulted in a failure to appear or failure to pay will be processed by civil assessment. And it's dated 11-14-06, signed by Heather D. Morse, Judge of the Superior Court.
That is very interesting and, of course, very significant. What do you make of that, Becky?
Well, I could see that it would have an effect on anyone getting a camping violation ticket in Santa Cruz because that's an infraction. It's not a misdemeanor. And, well, what you were saying about that they would be assessed a judgment that would be a financial incentive for them to pay the ticket off rather than let it go to collections where they would where it would quickly turn into a huge debt.
But it also means that
these tickets wouldn't accumulate and there wouldn't be an automatic warrant for the arrest of that person.
Yeah, most of the time I think homeless people are afraid to use police services if they are, or they're wary of even being in public spaces where they can be seen because they know they haven't been able to keep track of or take care of tickets for sleeping, tickets for biking the wrong way, and Pacific Avenue tickets for sitting near a shop, all these tickets which are infractions, in which if you don't go to court, you do get a failure to appear, and in the past, warrants have issued and you get picked up and arrested. Or, I mean, the cop can choose just to write you a second promise to appear, but often you can get arrested.
Wasn't that what Dennis Rehm was trying to get accomplished de facto, was that sleeping ban tickets would never result in jailing?
I think both Dennis Rehm and then the earlier activists, Flory, Jacobs, and Edwards, were trying to do the same thing. They actually went to court and argued that you can't arrest, you can't jail a homeless person for a failure to appear, a failure to pay. Actually, it's a failure to pay. Failure to appear, you can't. You could under that argument, but a failure to pay, there's a misdemeanor law which makes it a failure to pay a traffic infraction, an actual criminal offense. But there was at the time in the 90s no such law for non-vehicular infractions like sleeping ban tickets.
I'm wondering how this came out. Was Heather Morse's hand forced by some sort of court decision?
Well, no, I think it's just a matter of people. It's a matter of economy. I mean, the cost of jailing a homeless person in Santa Cruz for these kinds of minor things is, I think it's $100, $150 to do that. And, they're not going to be able to pay anyway, so they come in.
You're just talking about the booking fee.
Right.
And there are a lot more costs involved with that. The National Coalition on Homelessness, report said that just across the board, looking at lots of different cities, that in the average it would cost the city about $1,000 to enforce every citation issued against a homeless person.
I'd like to see the documentation on that one, but I mean that could well be. But it certainly costs, it costs a significant amount of money. I remember the sheriff back in the 80s when we were getting arrested, getting upset with the police chief saying, you're coming into my jail, with all these homeless people who are getting arrested for sleeping. It's costing us a huge amount of money. And in those days they were doing like hundreds of tickets a month, just partially because we were protesting and partially for the hell of it because that was how they were. I think the implications of this new court order by Morse are that if you're a homeless person and you have a sleeping ban ticket you haven't taken care of, if you have to, worry about your assets being, confiscated. I'd be curious to see if the police are going to act as, tax collectors for these businesses. I mean, the collection agencies. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but at least they're not going to be, if this is followed, warrants for failure to appear or failure to pay a sleeping ticket. I think this can be very significant.
It's actually a veiled victory for homeless people.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think it's so veiled. I think it's pretty pretty upfront. I mean, I think the main point is that most people who get these tickets are not homeless in some respects.
Kind of a downside if you get a ticket and then you don't pay it because you can't, and then it's immediately assessed another $350 on top of the $90. So, just for falling asleep at night, you owe $450. That's a pretty big hurdle for a homeless person, especially someone who's trying to get out of homelessness, which is pretty much most of the homeless I know are trying to get out of homelessness.
Right. I mean, it is going to result in real credit problems for people who are homeless, getting these huge debts,
back into housing because they have a lousy credit rating.
Right. I mean, so it's, it has its upside and it has its downside. The whole thing, of course, of criminalizing people for sleeping is something we'll be fighting tomorrow. And hopefully you'll be there with your video camera keeping an eye on the police at noon. What do you think there, Becky?
I think that I will arrive at the last possible second, but I will be there.
Oh, that's great. That's going to be at 333 Church, for those who have forgotten. In front of the city attorney's office, there'll be hot soup and hopefully a sunny day. Who knows? Maybe we'll
it
set
won't
up a...
be sunny. It's supposed to rain all day.
Wait a minute. I told you it was supposed to be a clear day.
Well, who did you check it with?
Well, that's what I heard from KGO Weather as I drove up here. Come on. All right. Well, who knows? Maybe we have to go into the eaves of the building.
Let's just hope this blows over by then.
Maybe we can all just come and sit in the city attorney's office and have hot coffee.
Well, just think, it'll just be that much better a message if we're standing out in the cold rain.
Right. It'll be very moral.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for
much
the update
visual.
from from Heather Morse. Becky, and any other reports from the street or thereabouts you want to give us?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, keep tuned, and remember, no Zionist propaganda on Free Radio or we'll beat you up.
Spoken like a nonviolent activist.
Indeed. Well, I've always believed in the Resource Center for Nonviolence. You take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm going to turn now to the Scotts Valley City Council. And this is a group of five individuals, four men and one woman, who apparently were completely reelected. I guess only two of them ran unopposed. They had a longer discussion of the issue of a camping ordinance up in Scotts Valley, which essentially gives Police Chief John Weiss, who I spoke to at some length at this council meeting afterward, the power to arrest people, cite people, and threaten people with a law that says you cannot camp on any public property in Scotts Valley. And the camping is not defined. I guess they just assume you know what it means. I guess the phrase with the intention of remaining overnight is also part of that, which might make it more problematic if you actually got a real, if somebody actually wanted to take it to court and take it to trial. The sleeping ban, for instance, in Santa Cruz does not require the prosecution to prove that you intended to remain overnight, simply that you were asleep, or if they arrest you under another section, the blanket ban, that you are covering up with blankets. But if they arrest you in Scotts Valley or in Santa Cruz now, under the camping section, which means, let's suppose you had the temerity to set up a tent against the rain, or they found you sleeping during the day in a spot on public property they didn't want you to be on, so they said, you're camping here. And even though it's not between the hours of 11 and 8:30 when sleeping is illegal, 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning, still we want to give you a citation, so we're going to call you a camper in Santa Cruz. They would have to prove, if they want to do camping as a charge against you, that you intended to remain overnight. Now, a judge might just say, well, he had a tent. That means she or he intended to remain overnight. But it's been argued by attorneys early on when we had a lot of this going through court 15, 20 years ago. Ray Glock-Grunike was the attorney, Grinning Ray, as we called him, that, to prove an intention, you have to show that they really intended to stay. If they were just there for a while for the day, that's legal and not illegal under the camping ordinance. And the same problem will confront Scotts Valley authorities. We have a caller here. Hi there, caller. We had you. We had a caller. Call back, caller, if you want to get in a word before the Scotts Valley tape begins to unroll here, and you get to hear the Scotts Valley City Council and all its glory. Actually, there's a lot of information online that I and others have posted on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz about the Scotts Valley ordinance, about the kind of specious and bigoted arguments being used to put it forward. I had a long discussion with the police chief. It was kind of interesting. It's the longest discussion I've ever had with any police chief, and actually inside the city council chambers. Here's a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
And who is this?
Madison.
Madison. My goodness. How are you tonight, Madison?
Well, good. This lady came by yesterday. She's having a little problem in the court, and I just happen to be one of the people called anonymously, and so I'm going in to help her. But she's homeless, been here a long time, and she left her bag here for a while where she went to get something to eat, and it was a paper bag, and I knew it was going to rain, so I fixed her up, with some stuff that was more heavy duty.
Good for you.
She's like the third homeless person I worked on this year, personally.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what she came by with. This is what you get when you're homeless in Santa Cruz. One can of some kind of soup without the can opener. One wool sweater. One scarf that I think was wool or polyester. I think there was a pair of socks. A sleeping bag, like one of those $10 Kmart ones, which is useless in this kind of weather. What else? And I think there was some other a hat or something like that, and that's what her Christmas gift was.
Merry Christmas and have some coal.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I mean,
who gave this Christmas gift?
So I got her a big plastic kind of a grocery bag, a good carry-all bag, and I put it all in there. while she was gone, and then a few other, and then there wasn't a plastic bag. I put in some matches and candles and, you know, a couple, you know, a number of plastic bags, large, medium, small, whatever, you know, an umbrella. But I, there wasn't a tent in there, you know, and I would like to, because I've been homeless, but I'd like, you know, I would listen to this guy, Gene Burns, talk about the gang, and it's, that's like one step from homelessness, because it's sort of interrelated at times, but I was kind of, I had to sit back after living in three different ghettos and just laugh at the people on KGO radio talking about the philosophical approach as to why people are in gangs. And I mean, I could just hear them doing it with the homeless. They just sound like a bunch of suburbanite, constipated know-nothing, because they haven't gotten themselves right to the bottom of the street and what it takes. And I think we should announce National Homeless Day, where everybody in this town has to go out and spend the day, one whole 24-hour deal, homeless. Like, give your somebody you know your keys, and you're out on the street one day just to get what the deal is. You know, I've been through it three different times. I never took anything from anybody, never asked for it, but... You know, some people have the wherewithal to be able to get out of it.
You can
they
actually,
have all the mental facilities.
Actually, Madison,
some of them don't.
Madison, people can come out tomorrow at 333 Church Street in front of the city attorney's office, and, you know, you'll actually be able to talk to a few live homeless people. And who knows, we may decide to sleep overnight, and you can possibly be homeless and be ticketed, too, or perhaps ignored
right.
by the police as well.
Well, I asked people last time. I told them there were people out here who don't have blankets. Please put a blanket out in front of your house. Okay, so I walked around at like 3 miles of downtown. I did not see one person that put anything out.
Of course,
at
if
all.
Anybody put any blankets out tonight, they get pretty wet pretty quick. So
yeah, but you put it in a big trash bag because both of those come in mighty handy.
This
when you're homeless.
This.
Oh yeah, that's what else she got. She got
wait,
two
let me ask,
windbreakers, poncho, cheapo thing. Those you couldn't even sit at a stand.
Where did this gift come from?
I don't know. She came up the street, so I assume it was Salvation Army
Salvation Army.
Feeding station over by 7-Eleven.
Right.
She came up from that way, so I'm...
Well, you know, it's hard to criticize people for giving anything to anybody, and particularly people who need it. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I thank you for the call, Madison.
Well, you know, one day, what, do they do this twice a year? Well, this is something people need, you know, all the time.
Thanks, Madison.
Or you know what this town needs to run is a design competition. This is not Kirby the Jackass's idea.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Rips off every lip.
And I'm going to roll, Madison, because I want to get this tape rolling, and I do appreciate the info. So, you know, call back if you got more you need to say. But you're tuned to Free Radio. 427-3772 is the number to call in. Let's hear some of what the folks in Scotts Valley said. The Scotts Valley City Council meeting, as I said, I was talking to Police Chief John Wise up there, who actually was quite responsive last time. I talked about how friendly he was. He came up to me, this was 2 weeks before, shook my hand, said he'd read all my stuff online. I don't know if he was going to come to a Huff meeting or anything of that sort. But and he the problem with all this, of course, is that Wise, as well as being the friendly, young, forward-looking Scotts Valley police chief, is also the man who has created this law and brought it to the Scotts Valley City Council. And we'll be talking more about that after hearing the segment on Scotts Valley City Council, the second reading. Again, this was on the consent agenda and would have been passed without any discussion whatsoever, except that I requested it be pulled from the consent agenda. And apparently, although perhaps it's Tracy, the city clerk worker, is mistaken on this. She told me this was the first time any item had been pulled from the consent agenda by a member of the public in 2 years. So maybe they have a different process up there, but that sounds pretty strange to me. I've heard rumors that Scotts Valley is the only city in the Santa Cruz County area which is majority Republican registration. And that might alarm all you Democrats out there, but since the Democrats in Santa Cruz have kept a law that criminalizes poor people in power, the Democrats in power have kept a law that criminalizes poor people outside on nights like this, for instance, when there's completely inadequate shelter and everybody's wet and so forth, and it makes them face $90 citations, compliments of Ranger Wallace and his pals in the police force. Democrats are no better than Republicans. In fact, their hypocrisy is even worse because they run on a platform of compassion. And, of course, you can see how compassionate how they are, how concerned they are about ending the war in Iraq, how determined they are to impeach Bush and Cheney, who have gotten us into the most egregious war crimes. It's true locally, too. Anyway, let's hear from the Scotts Valley City Council. You're going to hear now a woman speaking at the oral communications segment, and then I'm going to speak myself, and then I think we go pretty directly to the Scotts Valley City Council agenda item, the camping ban.
But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about the 4th of July parade, and I hope this doesn't seem too minor, but it really kind of chaps my hide. I'm kind of a rules person, and I had intended to have a peace float in the 4th of July parade, and I was advised that there's no political slogans or protests allowed, and so I said, okay, I understand that. However, when I got to the parade on the 4th of July, there was a Schwarzenegger float, and there was a float vote for a man who was running for county office. And I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want it to, you know, seem political or like I was coming out against this individual. But I did run into him, and I said, gee, you know, I was really disappointed. I wanted to have a peace float, and they said I couldn't, no political slogans. Then I show up at the parade, and you've got this float that says, vote for you. I says, what, you know, I don't think for county office it's good, you know, if you don't read the rules or if you don't think the rules apply to you. I don't think that reflects well on you as a candidate. And he says, oh, no, Lynn, no, no. He says, I've got a friend down at the city, and on the 4th of July I just called him and said, can I come and be in the parade? And he told me, sure. So I thought, oh, okay. So since I don't have a friend down at the city, I just feel like if it's rules for us, it's rules for all of us. So when I looked at the parade rules, and yeah, number 14, no political slogans, I also noticed that people who late entry have to pay twice the normal entry fee. So I just wanted to make sure if we could find out who it was at City Hall that it didn't say vote for Schwarzenegger, but it seemed political, and it was a little offensive to me, but that's just me. But it did say vote for this other candidate. So if you could find out who did it, and then if you could double-check and just make sure, since it was at the last minute that they paid the double fee, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, I just want to make a comment. This was our first attempt, and one of the great things that we
this
learned
is
in our
Councilman
first attempt
Member
is we
Aguilar,
had a
previously
and
Mayor
some of the things,
Stephanie
something
Aguilar.
You mentioned, and also the other thing that was really vital is we needed more porta potties, so that was part of our debriefing too. So I want you, we learned, so we appreciate your bringing that forward. That will certainly be adhered to very intently at our next attempt, and we will have more porta potties, and there are a couple other things that we wanted to get fine-tuned for our next 4th of July, so I appreciate you bringing that forward.
I still want to make sure they get twice their fee because I know they can use the money.
Okay. Well, it wasn't a fundraiser.
Yeah, one question, Lynn.
It says late entries will pay twice the normal entry fee.
One question, Lynn. Do you know who told you you couldn't have a
this
peace float?
This is Mayor Bastici speaking.
I mean, you don't need to make a name.
No, it wasn't a city person. It was someone else who was involved with the parade who said, if you look at the rules, you'll see that it says no political slogans, no protests, and they felt that like that was, you know, kind of like a protest against the war kind of thing or a political slogan and advised that maybe I didn't, you know. So, I mean, I could have guessed. It wasn't the city that told me that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mayor, if you recall, no fees were collected for anybody either at the last moment. We decided not to collect fees, if you recall. All fees were waived.
Everybody was free. We just were glad they were there. That's great.
I'm Ann Wise, and I'm a member of the County Child Care Planning Council.
And I just came
and
to let you know that we stand ready to
this
help
is, this
you.
This is oral communications at the Scotts Valley City Council. We're shortly going to go into the camping ban discussion. And also, I spoke in a moment, and you'll hear me responding to this issue of the 4th of July parade, which to me was amazing. And you'll hear what I had to say about this.
So please give us a call.
The permit not being allowed for a peace sign on the 4th of July parade up in Scotts Valley.
Please, Robert.
Council members, members of the community, my name is Robert Norris. I'm a patron of Scotts Valley regularly, and I'm also kind of shocked to hear that a 4th of July rally is in fact told you cannot have a peace float or political slogans. I mean, traditionally, politicians use the 4th of July as a sort of a patriotic event. That's the essence of American patriotism, is kind of a vigorous debate and discussion on current issues. And it's not simply a commercial venture or an exercise for children and balloons and things of that sort, although those are nice things to have too. And I think that I would like to, you know, second what the previous speaker said, except that I would encourage us not to point the finger of blame about, you know, so-and-so had a Schwarzenegger sign and so-and-so had a Bush sign. I think that all of these signs are appropriate on the 4th of July. I mean, this kind of is where our country came from, or hopefully where it's going anyway. And I would also invite folks to come down to Santa Cruz on New Year's Eve, where there's going to be a self-generated parade that won't require permits or regulations, and that will allow political signs, both pro-peace and pro-war, whatever you'd like, express your mind and your thoughts, only do so in a peaceful way. And I think that is what we need, not more regulation. I think we need more tolerance and a sort of a broader understanding that all of these things are allowed. And part of this involves members of the community realizing that they shouldn't necessarily listen to everything that one bureaucrat or another tells them, that you have to ultimately assert your rights or else you lose them. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Anybody else wishing to speak at this time? Close public comment time. And I will go to city manager and ask if there's any alterations to
and
the consent.
What we have now is sort of some business that's happening prior to the item J, which is the second reading of the camping ordinance on the Scotts Valley agenda.
Item E, which is a winter
and they're taking a preparation. They take an item off, and they're discussing it actually as.
We will be doing that work.
As I kind of talk over it. And what I'm going to do is while we're waiting for this item to come up, and you may hear a little bit in the background as I speak, so I can monitor it at the same time here.
Thank you. Item J, our camping.
Here we go.
So item E will become A1, and item J will become
A2. They're still working on the consent agenda and how they're ordering the items that have come off the consent agenda. You may recall that about a week ago, or I think it was a week ago, I had an interview with Gregory Afghani. And Gregory.
We will go to any alterations to the regulations.
Gregory is a man who wrote an article for Counterpunch on the L.A. Skid Row situation for the homeless and the Jones decision down there. And I'm currently kind of. I got an email from him today. On the question of what's happening with that decision. I'm hoping to have an update on him from him on Sunday. He'll be hopefully coming back on the air and talking on Sunday. Also hope to get Anita Henry in the studio. Anita is the head of MedX, a medical marijuana provider in Santa Cruz, who has some strong views. She's called in on different occasions, and she's a dissenter and an outspoken woman, and also not in the best of health. So I'm really glad when I can get her on the air. So tune in on Sunday between 9:30 and 1
prepare site for future location
for information on that. And again, I'm listening to the background of the Scotts Valley City Council, which is coming up shortly on the camping ordinance, which
anyone from the public wishing to
is about to come up.
Does this matter? CNN, all in favor, say aye.
And they're voting on the prior item, and they're coming up now with the camping ordinance. I believe that's coming up now. Scotts Valley City Council meets twice a month.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Johnson. We will move to A2, which is J on our consent agenda. We
which is the second reading of the adoption of Ordinance Number 147.4, amending Title 7, Chapter 712, Section 712.040, regarding no overnight camping on city property.
I'm not quite sure what's going on here.
I want the chief to reiterate.
Okay. I mean, at this time, do we need to go over this with staff or ask for public comment?
Just ask for public comment.
Okay. For public comment now. And we would request that you keep your comments to 3 minutes if you're an individual or 5 minutes if you're representing a group.
And I wanted to point out here that they are not allowing, they're not asking for any input from the city staff or the police about issues raised by speakers at the last meeting, which you can access on the Free Radio archives, I should say the archives of this show, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, but going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and you can actually hear the last city council meeting's discussion, at which the issues are again raised by the individuals who spoke, myself and others. But you would have thought that the police chief, who presents a very liberal perspective at first glance, would want to reply to these concerns, or at least since this law is coming from him, that does not happen. And the city council actually is treating this pretty much as a done deal, not pretty much, completely as a done deal, and that's why it's on the consent agenda. It's not, in Santa Cruz, you get two public hearings for every law, and it's public hearings people are allowed to speak. If something's on the consent agenda in Santa Cruz, under the Rotkin rule, as passed a year and a half ago, you only have, you may have no time to speak on the item. If you've spent 5 minutes talking about anything else on the consent agenda, you can't even talk about the item, or you'll be arrested, or you'll be shut down and told to leave. Anyway, here we go. This is public comment on the camping ordinance in Scotts Valley.
At Cabrillo College Homeless Task Force, that's who I'm here with today. So this is the camping ordinance to criminalize camping on Scotts Valley public property. And last time we met 2 weeks ago, the main concerns were public health and public safety. Public health being mainly defined as environmental degradation. I know we talked a lot about, get the perfect level of this, campers littering and affecting the water quality. Councilmember Paul Marigonda, that was his main focus. And I think it's interesting that you guys point that out as your main justification for passing this ordinance. And I think you guys should do your homework a little more. But instead of saying that, I did it for you. And I went and talked to a couple of professors at Cabrillo College, one a geologist specializing in water quality. And she did confirm my suspicion that, in general, if you look on averages, the average camper or transient camper, as Police Chief Weiss calls them, has an ecological footprint, which is what we use to measure your actual negative impact on the environment, far, far less than the average homeowner slash automobile as a primary source of transportation user. So really what this does is this criminalizes one way of life that is actually more beneficial for the environment and leads people to the other one. So the first claim that this is a public health issue, I think you can kind of debunk that pretty easily. Mr. Marigonda actually suggested, in terms of the private property, and this is a direct quote, "I would strongly suggest that if you're in one of these affected areas and you're one of the property owners, consider clear cutting. I'm not trying to be callous. I'm trying to be a good neighbor here. Clean up the area is what I'm trying to suggest. Make it less of an attractive nuisance." I think this is a good quote to sort of illustrate the lack of understanding here in terms of the ecological basic principles. Clear cutting is not what you should do, especially when you say that what really gets your goat about this is the environmental impact. So I think in the future you guys should take on a more educated opinion. And I didn't think you sounded callous. I thought you sounded slightly uninformed on that part. For the public safety issue, I won't spend much time because you guys didn't spend much time on it. There didn't seem to be any specifics that you guys had to bring up. I would be very interested to see some hard data on the public safety issues that campers do present to the community in general. And if that can be shown to be a serious public danger, then I think we need to address that. But I think criminalizing camping and saying that's for as a public safety issue, I think that's I haven't seen that yet, and I think we should request more statistics on that as a community before we sort of rush into passing this law. Also, a lot of the council members did say last time that there is no magic bullet, as Mr. Barrett said, there's no magic bullet. Mr. Johnson went as far to say it gives me no pleasure to help pass an ordinance like this, mostly because I don't think there's any clear-cut solution. What's your name, ma'am?
Aguilar.
Mrs. Aguilar said there's a lot of difficult issues that we have to face, social and culturally, that I don't think this will make a huge impact on. And I think these are interesting things. You know, we do have some hesitations about passing this, yet we still do, and everyone knows it's freezing out there. I'm very glad to go home to a house tonight. And I think you guys did pass this in the coldest months. This didn't creep up on us. So I would like for us to really pursue these things. We discussed that we do need to do more, and yet we still did pass this. So the only thing we've done so far is criminalize camping with a shelter in the coldest months, which does seem somewhat hypocritical when we do all acknowledge that this isn't the only thing. Mayor Bastici, I'd like to commend you on bringing to the table some alternative out-of-the-box solutions. I don't know if staff has looked into talking to that RV park about possible setting up places to camp for these people during the winter. I would definitely encourage you guys to do so. Keep on doing that. You also mentioned in closing, this is another direct quote, there are other areas to camp. There are other avenues if you truly want to camp and be a person all of your own. There are other ways to do that. There are campgrounds to do that. And there is financial help out there if that's your choice rather than be in a shelter. And I'm not sure if you misspoke on that. I don't know any places. I think you guys were the last city in Santa Cruz County to enact a no-camping ordinance. So now there really aren't any campgrounds out there, actually. If there are, if you did just misspeak, I know a lot of people would be very interested as to where those are. And I think tonight, since it is cold, I think putting this off any longer, I think it would be important to get that information out there, because I know it's not public knowledge. I guess just to say, you know, we can wait 2 weeks between every meeting, but every single night it's freezing out there. There will be, you know, the first time this ordinance is used, there's going to be lawsuits in terms of a fiscal impact. I know Police Chief Weiss mentioned that there would be none. None directly, but there will definitely be money put into lawsuits. The first time you give this out without having shelter, the federal court, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, has said so. There will be a lawsuit. You know, if somebody freezes to death because they were told they couldn't erect a shelter and there was no shelter to go to, there will also be lawsuits then. That one, I assume, will be more expensive. So I think this is inhumane, unconstitutional, environmentally foolish, as well as fiscally irresponsible. So for all those reasons, I think we should not pass this. And if you guys really do pass this, I would encourage you all to pursue those other solutions. Right now, you know, depending on your actions here tonight and further on, you can either prove that that was simply lip service to other avenues to distract from the fact that you were passing an inhumane law, or we can follow up on that and really do some things to help rather than criminalizing sleeping. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck, we did contact the RV park here, and there are tents available, if I'm correct.
We haven't pursued it beyond that.
But they do have sites available. You can use
them. Have to follow up. Yeah, it wasn't clear.
Thank you. We can give that to you after the meeting or from staff, yes.
Hi, my name is Bernard Klitzner, and I'm a resident of the city of Santa Cruz. And I struggle here on how to talk to you folks because I don't live in this city, and I don't think people from other cities should be telling you how to run your city. However, you know, there is really something common with the question of human rights. I didn't come last 2 weeks ago, but I was watching you on television. And I think that you use, it sounded like degradation, you know, of the environment was your main motivation. At least that's what you're putting out. And sleeping and camping is not really degradation. You have all kinds of laws, you know, on the books for that. And I think you ought to use those laws and change the way your police operate so they could catch people that are degrading, you know, the property, public property. So let me just ask you a few questions. What will happen, you know, when the police, you know, asked a mentally ill person to leave or they ticket that person? You know, there's a good chance that person could really go crazy, you know, and now you're going to have a death on your hands, you know, because of this law, you know. What are the rents up here? You know, how many people can really afford your rent system? You know, I don't know. You know, if it's anything like Santa Cruz, there's a real problem, you know. Have you studied, you know, how many people that have become homeless, you know, right here in the root of Scotts Valley? Have you done those studies? If you've done them, I'd like to know. Lots of our homeless people are women and children, and I believe, you know, when I was watching you on TV, it looked like that maybe one or two of you, you know, mentioned that homeless people are drunks and bums, and that's just not true. You know, I mean, there's, you know, as a class, all kinds of people that live in houses, you know, are you could probably label that way, and lots of people that live in houses, you know, are not very sanitary also. In my mind, you know, it's the human right to sleep. And you guys, you know, are taking away people's human rights. Even the people that you don't like, that you consider trash or whatever you want, you know, that's wrong. Everybody has a right to sleep, and you should be part of the solution. And you're not. You're moving in a different direction. And that's just awful. Anyway, thank you for hearing me. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Bernard. And if you'd like to leave that list of questions and truly want them answered, I'm sure staff can, if you leave your address, we'll be happy to send those to you.
Hello, council and community. I spoke last time on this issue, and I appreciate your time. I'm a little bit nervous.
Could you give us your name and
yes, I'm
and
sorry. It's
residence.
Tim Rumford. I live in Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Tim.
I run Humanity for Homeless. I agree with all the previous people who have spoken on this issue, and we are all sort of colleagues in different organizations. I feed and help clothe people downtown in the city of Santa Cruz. And I feel that beyond the other things that these people brought up, that you guys are pushing your own problem into the city of Santa Cruz, which is already overwrought with problems. We don't have enough shelter space. People are already freezing. We have people in wheelchairs. We have people who are too sick to be let in shelters, but they have no other place to go. People in wheelchairs that I meet like that. I see battered women. I see everything you can think of. We have vets from World War II in Iraq who come to our feeding. I know you guys give $148,000 to 156 different organizations in Santa Cruz. There are not that many organizations in Santa Cruz that really directly shelter the homeless. Okay, there's maybe four or five, and it's 5% of the homeless population that they shelter. You really haven't proven to us that you really have any shelter system here at all. and I don't really think you've thought out of the box at all on the situation. Some of the quotes that Matt mentioned to me very much bothered me, the idea of clear-cutting. I thought the mayor was starting to think out of the box until his last comment there. The police up here have a pretty hard-nosed reputation, and I asked a lot of the homeless people in Santa Cruz if they felt that this was a great place to go sleep because of your law, and they don't feel that way. It's colder up here. It was 21 degrees at 9 in the morning the other day when I called one of my companions down in Felton. People, I have a feeling, are camping up here for many reasons. Maybe they have family in the area. Maybe in Felton they're close by. But it's colder up here, okay? You guys are not providing any shelter. You're just pushing this problem in another direction and throwing money at the city of Santa Cruz. And it's not enough. It's just not enough. You know, it's this much in a problem that's this big. And, you know, you've given out a few sleeping bags. You've tried to do this. You've tried to do that. But these measures are tepid. And I really feel like you guys have been fairly callous and have not looked at all the options. And I highly suggest that you look at what Chattanooga is doing. Chattanooga has put a whole city council together with a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. And they're not a city that is that much larger than Santa Cruz. They have a homeless population of 4,000 people. They have a huge town meeting twice a month where they meet on ending chronic homelessness. And they take a huge, effort in that. And Santa Cruz City fails in that too. But you're just adding to the problem. And I really hope that you put this decision off until the Jones decision is finished, until the winter months are over, until this cold is over, and take another thought on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Any else?
Okay, thanks.
What I'm doing here is giving out questions to the... Actually, I'm giving out copies of two laws to the Scotts Valley City Council for them to look at, which they can use instead of the law they're proposing. You're listening to the Scotts Valley City Council on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the section of last night's City Council meeting. They meet every Wednesday at 6 o'clock, every other Wednesday, in their City Council chambers up in Scotts Valley. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. This is Bathrobus Pier's Broadsides. The call-in number here is 427-3772.
Hi, my name again is Robert Norris, and I work for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'll be speaking for that group. I just handed to the council members and to Police Chief Weiss a copy of two laws that currently exist that actually can be used and are currently used by authorities throughout the state and the county to deal with recalcitrant campers, if you want to use that phrase. I don't believe it's appropriate to use these laws, but they exist, and I'm presenting them so that you can understand that you don't have to add an additional law tonight. The County Candy Camping Ordinance says it's unlawful to camp overnight or occupy a mobile home or recreational vehicle parked overnight upon any highway, street, or alley, including the right-of-way, except for emergency purposes. I spoke to the sheriffs today, and they say that law can be enforced by Scotts Valley Police or by deputies. Similarly, the state anti-lodging law, which I mentioned to District Attorney Paul Maraganda here last time, makes it illegal if a person lodges in any building, structure, vehicle, or place, whether public or private, and that deals with the whole issue of private property you've been worrying about, without the permission of the owner or person entitled to the possession or in control of it. This has been used in Berkeley, San Diego, San Francisco, Sacramento.
These laws exist. So what you're doing here is tonight, and I suspect you're going to do it regardless of what we say, and I hope you don't, is you're going to gratuitously pass another law which makes you legally liable and also makes us, puts us in the position of having to do more work, and that's what I don't like. Because there are going to be homeless people who are going to be harassed under this law, even though you know, because even Chief Weiss admits this, that there's shelter tonight in this city and actually in the entire county for less than 160 people in the North County area, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz alone. So there's obviously inadequate shelter. So all you're doing is, all you're sending is a big get out of town sign, which I think, of course, is cruel and unusual punishment, and the Ninth Circuit Court agrees with me on this issue. You have to find another solution, and if you need one, you have one right here on this piece of paper. We have no stats on how many people actually come to Scotts Valley for safe haven. That is to say, you know, is Scotts Valley a magnet? I've heard of Santa Cruz being called a magnet, though I don't think that's necessarily true. All the beachside cities, to some extent, are magnets. People come there. They go through. Some of them stay, and some of them are poor, and they get poorer because they get into situations where the rents are too high, they've lost their job, you know, the health insurance is fails. You know the story. You've had friends that this has happened to. They're local homeless people, and you're criminalizing them. You're saying it will be illegal for you 30 days after we pass this law to put up a structure to a tent to shepherd yourself against the rain. It'll be illegal to fall asleep at night. Is this what a civilized community wants to do? And if you need to do it in some special case, don't you already have a law to do that? So I'm reduced to sort of a gulping and gasping. You know, I mean, it's been mentioned about the environmental. This is a blind. You know, yes, campers can be messy, and it is a problem in terms of degrading the environment. But how much of a problem is it compared to putting people in a position where they're in life-threatening circumstances? And how much of a problem is it compared to, say, a day's shopping debris at one of the malls or leftovers at a fast food restaurant? You know, you've got to look at it in terms of proportion. You talk about feces and, you know, urine. Are there any 24-hour bathrooms open in Scotts Valley for poor people or for homeless people? In Santa Cruz, we have this problem. We don't have 24-hour bathrooms. I mean, it's stupid, but there you have it. The city could consider a green camper or considerate camper program. That is, if you want campers to camp responsibly, offer ways to do it. Bring in some people who can show campers how to camp more responsibly, who can offer them incentives to do that. Honestly investigate how many locals, as has been mentioned before, have become homeless in the last 15 years, so you can and also assess the minuscule emergency services that you actually have here. One of the council members made a claim, well, we're actually just helping people get closer to services in Santa Cruz, aside from being a get-out-of-town argument. It's not true. There are no services in Santa Cruz for 95% or 85 to 90% of the homeless people tonight. So you're not helping people. You're saying, we don't want to help. And not only that, we're going to take your rights away, and we're going to deny you the right to help yourself. Because people who are outside need to sleep like the rest of us, and we need to be dry like the rest of us. So you put me in a position where I need to contact groups like the National Coalition for the Homeless, the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, and the Northern California American Civil Liberties Union, which have all expressed an interest in protecting and restoring the basic rights of civil rights of homeless people around these laws. Because this is a very basic survival issue. We're not talking about the right to camp anywhere and everywhere. We're talking about the right to camp somewhere. And until that is met, you are in a legally vulnerable position and, of course, a morally unjustifiable position. Pretty much covers it. I need to say also that I think this is a... The police department's trying to solve a problem. It's getting complaints about people who it classifies as homeless, probably rightfully so. But the problems, and Chief Weiss was good enough to send me a letter today, and thank you for trying to email it three times and finally getting through, in which you acknowledge that these aren't camper stats where there's 75 to 100 campsite problems. They're problems with people that you have decided, or your officers have decided, or has categorized as homeless, who have created numerous different kinds of problems. And these are each a different kind of problem, and they don't involve what you're doing here is denying shelter. It's like saying, well, let's just cut them off at the root. Let's strangle them. Let's cut off their food supply. It's like treating homeless people like rats. And I think this is not something you want to do as a moral person, and I don't think it's something you want to do as a fiscally responsible agent of the city. So you can think about it again. But I'm afraid, you know, having seen the unanimous vote last time, I think this is pretty much a done deal. The community should be advised that if, and anyone who's sympathetic with the rights of poor and homeless people here should give a call to Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And when an individual is told, no, sir, you cannot sleep here, but we're not going to send you to any place, we're just going to tell you to leave and move on, I want to be informed of that at 423-4833. I'll inform the appropriate attorneys, and we'll see if there's the motivation to proceed to challenge this law, not because we have animus against the city, but because we have to defend the rights of even the poorest people in the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Anybody else wishing to speak on this item? If not, I will close the public hearing and ask for comments from City Council.
I just want to say...
this is Paul Maraganda.
I did not mean my comments 2 weeks ago to... I just used a poor choice of words, okay? When I used the term clear-cutting, I specifically was referring to a location at the corner of Sky Park and Mount Hermon Road. The property owner was present, where, frankly, where I lived for many years. And my kids used to go there, and they... you know, would see homeless people camping there. I mean, they weren't comfortable about it. And you know, let's divorce that aside from being a policymaker here. That's me talking as a parent, okay? And that, you know, my boys were a lot younger. But I still stand by what I said, that, you know, some of these places, the property owners should maybe consider cleaning them up and not being an attractive nuisance. I'm not going to back down from that statement. I do wish to retract the term clear-cutting because that's not me. I didn't mean to say that. But the rest of my comments I will stand by. My position, despite the presentations that are made today, has not changed. I don't know if others have comments, but I'm prepared to move adoption of Ordinance Number 147.4. Well, I'm still moving adoption of Ordinance Number 147.4, amending Title 7, Chapter 7.12, Section 7.12.040, regarding no overnight camping on city property, and waive the detailed reading thereof of the ordinance.
Second.
Any discussion on that?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Okay, we will move forward to our next, which is item number one.
And that was the Scotts Valley City Council voting 5-0, answering none of the arguments. Fundamentally, the basic argument is, how can you arrest someone for sleeping at night or sheltering themselves if you have no shelter? And it's already been established that the federal courts have ruled this is cruel and unusual punishment and a violation of the federal constitution. Why do this? And why do this additionally when you have two laws that can be used instead, unconstitutionally it seems, but if you have to? And they had no response. Didn't ask for a response from the police chief, Weiss, and they just moved ahead with a 5-0. So in 30 days there will be a Scotts Valley camping law. It probably won't change a great deal the way homeless people are mistreated or treated in Scotts Valley. And again, in all candor, I've not had a lot of contact with Scotts Valley homeless people yet. A couple people in Felton, and rumors about Scotts Valley. If anybody listening to this broadcast has information about Scotts Valley police and how they treat homeless people, or Scotts Valley homeless people and how they're treated by authorities or merchants or just generally up there, please give a call to the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is at 423-4833. I did have a chat with John Weiss, the police chief, afterward, and as I said, it was a strange situation because he kind of corralled me as I was leaving the room, and we talked, you know, it was the kind of conversation that Scott Kennedy would have had me arrested for I don't know, 20 seconds into it, Councilmember Kennedy in Santa Cruz. Yeah, he actually did give me arrested at one point for even whispering to a homeless person. This lengthy conversation with the police chief, which went on while the council was happening, we tried to whisper, but it became clear that we were distracting people. After about 10 minutes or so, when the mayor turned to us and said, "You've got to take it outside," we did. But it was, it was interesting. The chief of police told me he was impressed to hear that I said camp somewhere, not camp everywhere, and he wanted to have more conversations about possible proactive solutions to help homeless people, indicating he didn't want to be cruel to homeless people. He wanted to deal with problems that came up. He wanted to deal with what he called the defiant camper who just refused to camp, or he would be arrested and come back to his campsite, or he would refuse to take all the wonderful services that are available and provided. And the police chief went through a number of itemizations of things he'd offered to various homeless people in Scotts Valley that they'd refused, and what can he do but use the law against them? And he then claimed that the county law that I proposed was not doable and that the state law had holes, although he didn't address any of the concerns about the local law that he was proposing, that, in the Ninth Circuit Court, he didn't mention what he was going to do with this decision. It seems, everyone's sort of ignoring it, including the American Civil Liberties Union locally and our own attorneys. We have a call, and we're nearing the end of this show, so I'm glad we do have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, I think the mayor of Scotts Valley has a hell of a lot of nerve saying, let's send them to Santa Cruz services. Like, let's send us up to Scotts Valley services. Yeah, I'll come use your library or your, I want to put my kid in your best school. Forget it. This town is already known for being overloaded and highly impacted with homeless, and how dare you, Scotts Valley? You know what I mean? Suck it up, all you Christians. Open your wallet, open your churches, and take care of your own. I have stuff in my home that belongs to a woman who got homeless in Santa Cruz and is staying in Scotts Valley, and then someone else, she just moved back down here into a room. And this is the second or third home. She's a tech person. She's lost since 2000. She lost her home, first of all, and then she lost a couple places to live and a position, and then she got another job. She's been through in the last 6 years, three or four different changes. So I think Santa Cruz people and community members who are cut, I just cut $25,000 checks for the brattiest kids and some of the poorest services I've ever seen. Now, I think you should do a tour, Robert. Get all those city councilmen and take them down and show them the cattle bin we have as an excuse for a homeless shelter.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be interested, Madison.
I wouldn't even put my horse in there. I'm not kidding.
I would urge you and others, you can call the mayor right now if you want, Mayor Bustici of Scotts Valley, and you can leave him a message. The number to call...
Oh, that guy. You listen to him.
Let me give the number out. The number to call is... Number to call is 440-5600. I mean, we can all preach to each other.
Everybody should.
Madison, yeah. Well, I hope you do. 440-5600 is the phone number.
I will. I mean...
440-5600.
I can't wait till one of his family members is homeless, because right. It will happen. It's in the statistics. It's coming. I have a realtor friend who lost three homes in Carmel.
Thank you, Madison.
And if she didn't have a family trust, she'd be on the street, too, and they don't have anything either.
Let me know if the mayor calls you back.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
He needs to be voted out just like God. They're just, their heads are bigger than their ability to fix anything.
Take
their
care.
They're reading their own press again.
Here. Thanks, Madison. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And again, the phone number for Mayor Bustici, or I should say for the city council and Mayor Bustici, is 440-5600. I'm not going to have time, of course, because we're nearing the end of the show, to play for you the reading of the names of the dead, which happened today at the Santa Cruz Homeless Service Center, attending on behalf of the city council, or perhaps just because he had an interest himself, was Councilmember Mike No Sleeping Sleeping Ban Forever Rotkin, who I said hello to him and gave him a flyer about the protest tomorrow at the city attorney's office, which I invite everyone again to come to, 333 Church Street, right across from the city offices parking lot. down from the Civic Auditorium on the same block as the Civic Auditorium on Church Street. And it's going to be hot food, and we're going to have, hopefully, if Kate Wells is well enough, she'll be speaking. We've invited, and Steve Argue has accepted. He's a former, both a former free radio broadcaster, free radio broadcaster Thomas Levitt will be there talking about issues, homeless issues, and we'll be gathering signatures for a petition to present to the city attorney demanding that he enforce, in essence, bring the city law into compliance with the federal constitutional decision of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has ruled that the Los Angeles sleeping ban is unconstitutional and that you have to allow people to sleep at night somewhere legally, which Santa Cruz does not do. It may be time to sleep in front of the city attorney's office at night. And I hope it's not raining, although Becky Johnson has suggested it might be. If it is, we're going to move under the eaves of the city offices, and maybe they'll for once be put to some good use insofar as how they relate to homeless people. And we'll see what happens with that. If you have further questions, you can give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I think we'll wind up this session of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, that's the name of the show, by playing the final comment of the woman who spoke at the very beginning of the Scotts Valley City Council meeting complaining that her peace float was disallowed from the 4th of July parade in Scotts Valley because it had a political message, but that a message supporting Arnold Schwarzenegger was allowed. Anyway, here's that discussion. And join me again on Sunday. I'm hoping to have some sort of surprise guests on the issue of the L.A. Skid Row situation. And this show will be archived on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. There's a lot of writing that's been done, or a certain amount of it, on the Scotts Valley City Council meeting. And again, if you want to call the mayor there and leave him a message now, you can, I believe, 440-5600. They may not have an answering machine. I may be wrong there. Or you can call the Santa Cruz City Council, because actually that's probably closer to home, 420-5020, and say, I called you last week. I'm calling you this week because there have been 7 cold days and nights and a wet night tonight where it's a $90 fine for a homeless person to get a citation, and you have been lying to us. It's not 30 tickets a month. It's more like 60 or 70 tickets a month. And it's a criminalization of poor people. And more people have died this year than any year in the statistics from the county that were presented today at the Homeless Service Center. And it's got to stop. And people have got to be allowed to shelter themselves if emergency shelter is not available. So, again, the number to call is 420-5020. And here's the final discussion that I had in the parking lot with one of the Scotts Valley residents, the woman who spoke on the peace issue.
Lynn Cordova.
We are on the parking lot of the Scotts Valley City Hall after you just came to City Hall on the issue of...
Oh, I just wanted to talk to them about the parade.
Last 4th of July parade, where your peace float was told it was going to cost twice as much because it was in there late and it wasn't allowed because it had the message. And
No, they just said that I was advised that I shouldn't do a peace float because there was no political slogans or protests allowed in the parade.
Didn't meet the standards of the Young Republicans.
Well, maybe that was it.
Now, you're also a stand-up comedian.
I do some stand-up comedy. I'm also a teacher, so I'm standing-up comedy all the time.
In case you're kind of a freezing-out stand-up community out here in the parking lot, you want to give us a little taste of your medicine? No.
Yes, okay. Here we go. Okay. I want to be a gangster, and I'm feeling mean, because I'm a uptown privileged teen. I don't need to steal, and I don't need to rob, because my parents love me, and my dad's got a job. I come from a loving, stable family. We put the hug in thug, don't you see? I do drive-bys with my mom, oh shit, because all I got is a learner's permit. So you better look out, because I'll be coming for you. Me and my posse and my mom's coming too.
Hear, hear. And we've been listening to the singing of...
Lynn Cordova.
Hey, Lynn, are you going to call in? You're going to give us some trenchant humor on the current Scotts Valley scene.
Oh. Definitely.
Okay, and you've got my card, so check it out. Next showtime is tomorrow night. We'll be playing some of this stuff on the air.
Okay.
All
thank
right.
you.
Okay.
All right.
This is Ken Cole speaking at the Homeless Service Center on December 21st.
And unfortunately, we won't have time to hear Ken Cole, but again, come back 9:30 on Sunday in the morning if you'd like to hear more of this. And if you have observed anything you want to put on the air, if you have news for us, if you have questions for me, I should say, and for any other homeless activists that you've heard, I'm often in touch with them on the air today. Give me a call on the Huff Line, 423-4833, and I'll be around tomorrow at noon in front of John Barisoni's office looking for John to change his policy toward homeless people and advise the city properly. They don't want a big lawsuit around the issue of the right to sleep. That would be silly, wouldn't it? Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe's Piers Broadsides.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. This is From the Cream to the Dregs, except Uncle Dennis is out of town this week, and myself, George, and Lee, Hobo Lee, hello.
Hi, it's nice to be here. I haven't been in a studio in a while.
See,
and we also have Jackie.
Hobo show, huh?
We also have Jackie in the
Jacqueline
show.
Is also in here with us.
I think actually the last time I was in here probably was on Robert Norse's show.
Talking about what?
Some months ago. It seems like sometimes when Robert has a slow news day, so to speak, he'll have the local hobo in, like me. You know, the connection. Hobos, homelessness. It's sort of a vague connection there. It was fun. He interviewed me. We had a good time.
What did he interview you about?
Just, you know, hobo tramp world. And actually, we had just ridden the local the week before that.
That
so
was a
kind
very
of fun.
Loud, by the way, just there.
Sorry.
Watch your levels.
Watch my
actually,
levels.
You're totally opposed to wearing headphones, and that's not the most...
I hate those things.
Best thing for radio, but we'll deal with it here. He's interviewing you about what now? Sorry.
Oh, well, I was just saying that... Robert and I had a lovely ride on the local train. Was
that Robert's first ride on the train?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
He'd never ridden a train before?
Yeah.
Ever in his entire life?
Not a freight. Yeah, he'd never ridden
How
a freight
How did he
train.
Handle that?
He was good. It was fun. It was nice to get to know Robert better. Yeah, he's a good guy. I like Robert a lot. It was fun to...
There was no dangerous moments, no frightening...
Sitting in the bushes, chatting and waiting for the train and all that. No, it was... its usual lovely self, and we had a good ride that day. It was fun. And the next week, Robert had me in and was just interviewing me about train world, hobo tramp world. I don't know when that was, 4 months ago maybe? 3 months ago, 4 months ago? Anyway.
Someone tried to call, and I don't know what happened there, but caller, if you want to call back the number, you know it, obviously, because you called it, unless it was a wrong number, which could happen. Anyway, we do have some music queued up here that Lee picked out. We've been listening to some Pink Floyd, but we're going to now hear one of Lee's favorite songs.
Doesn't that... I didn't say... I just said it was a good song.
Can you introduce it?
Oh, it's Cinnamon Girl off of... Neil Young's Crazy Horse album. Yeah, it's a good song. It's an old catchy Neil Young song.